Okay. Parshas Beshalach. So, working off the foundation that we have been building here for a very long time, concepts that now we should be familiar with, concepts that relate to one of our major themes, which is Eitz Hadas, the idea of the ani of a person being subjective, the whole explanation of the sin from that vantage point. That takes a person off their away from their goal. The idea that the ani and the anochi, right, coming together, that's the goal, but it's not so simple. And we spoke about the idea of the ayin, switching the nun and the yud, and a person, in a sense, reducing their impression that they are the means, they are an ends in and of themselves. We spoke about the yearning in a person for something more, for something missing, the vague but relentless sense of dissatisfaction of the vayichulu, right? Kol sanafshi, I'm seeking something, kesef, nichsefa nafshi. That yearning is currency. It helps us buy what we're trying to buy, which is chachma. A zakein is zeshekana chachma, that one who acquired wisdom. The search is for das, for knowledge, for understanding. It happened. The main part of the person is in the head, in the machshava, the part that could conceive of their purpose, their goal, their higher aspects, their godly aspects. We've spoken a lot about this. Now we're going to go into a new area, which we are going to begin to introduce, and we will be working with it for a while to come. It's a fundamental area, and it's the secret origin, you might say, to the ani, to the vayichulu, to the concept of tachlis, which also, by the way, is from the shorash of vayichulu. We're going to be working with the idea of the bria itself, the creation itself, how it came about from a philosophical, almost spiritual point of view, and the implications of that. And we're going to get to this idea by dealing with three basic points. Point number one, our question to start off today's share, is the question is the focus in the machshava, in the literature of the philosophers, and even in Kabbalistic literature, the focus on the idea that Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim represents a exile of speech and a liberation of speech. We're going to focus on this for a moment. That's how we're going to start to get into this new topic. We're going to look into the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the 13 Ikrim, and we're looking to the Ramban, which you have in front of you, and then we're going to get to our third huge topic, which is going to set the stage for what we'll be speaking about in the upcoming weeks. So the Kabbalah, Zohar says, this is a idea that you find in the regular mainstream Sfarim, and it's an idea that it's Kabbalistic in nature because it's saying something beyond the physical, but it's expressed in very real experiences that we're all familiar with, and that is that speech was in exile and speech was redeemed. This is a famous concept. You'll find it in many of the in Sfarim that discuss what was going on the spiritual levels in Golus Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. For example, Pesach, if you look at the word, you know, from a more of a theoretical point of view, it's Pesach. The mouth speaks. The mouth converses. Moshe Rabbeinu starts out by saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo ish devarim anochi, I can't speak. Something precluded him from being able to convey his ideas properly to Klal Yisrael. He could not convey, he could not articulate, he could not put into words the ideas that he needed to convey to Klal Yisrael. And yet after Matan Torah, after the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have Eloha Devar Masher Diber Moshe, an entire sefer of Moshe's speeches. He didn't have any problem speaking. So in Moshe himself, there was, so to speak, an exile of speech. And after Matan Torah, there was already the free-flowing speech of Moshe Rabbeinu, which became Torah itself. In addition to that, in this week's parsha, if you have the Chumash in front of you, you see that in Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Beis, Kadosh Baruch Hu brings them out of Mitzrayim, and he tells them to camp at Pi HaChirot. Pi HaChirot, what does that mean? Pi, the Peh, of Chirut, of freedom. Rashi says, This is the same place as pisom, pitom, and Ramses, right? Pi satum, the mouth that's clogged, that's blocked up. Remember we said in the end of Bereishis and Vayechi that when Yaakov died, nistamu einehem, their eyes and their hearts were clogged up or blocked. Remember we started speaking about that? So here they are coming from, they're coming to pi hachirot, which means a place where the mouth is liberated, peh chirut, right? Peh, right? The mouth that's free. And it used to be called, or it was also called pi pitom, pi satum, the mouth that is sealed, that couldn't speak, okay? So we have a lot of analogies to this concept, a lot of indications that speech was in Gullus. Moshe, Piachirot, Pesach, the Zohar itself says speech was in Gullus and speech is redeemed. When we speak about speech being in Gullus and speech being redeemed, although it sounds esoteric, what we really mean is that speech is a uniquely human capacity. And the highest madrega of speech, obviously, is tefillah. And what tefillah is supposed to be is a human being being able to accurately articulate, define in their mind, and articulate and convey to others what they really want, what their deepest need is, not just a physical temporary need. And the capacity to do that is called the redemption of speech. When you speak about the real things, and you speak about them correctly, and you know what they are, and you know them so clearly that you can specify what they are and discuss them, that's what we call speech being redeemed. And in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful, magnificent masterpiece. If you can get it, it's a masterpiece called, I think it's called something like The Redemption of Speech. It's a 2-hour shiur. The quality, it was on an old tape from the 60s. You can get a CD or whatever. It's unbelievable. And he speaks about this idea about speech being exiled and speech being redeemed. The main idea here is, but it's a very common classic idea. The idea here is that Klal Yisrael went through a process called Gullus, darkness, in which they learned, they actually came to know what it was they wanted and what it was they needed. The Nisim in Yetzias, through the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim and on the Yam, revealed to them what it was they were seeking and what it was they wanted and what they were missing. And once they experienced the loss, they were revealed to them what it was that was lacking in the void that they experienced. They saw what it was. Now, after that, they can articulate, they can speak, they can daven, they can know what it is that they're going to devote their lives to. So Yetzias Mitzrayim, the experience of it, the Nisim that reveal the Kodesh Baruch, which we're going to speak about in a minute, all lead to the capacity for Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah, to say Nasa v'Nishma, to say this is what we want, and then all of Tefillah is our continuing expression, affirmation of that, of this this knowledge that we have and this ongoing will that we have. So this is called the redemption of speech. Our question is this: how do we know, by what process did it come about that we knew what we wanted? So we have to look into the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That is what revealed to us what we were missing and what we wanted and what we're ready to sign on for and devote ourselves to forever, and our children and our grandchildren forever. So, you have the Ramban in front of you, the pages that I handed out. So, Rav Moshe Shapiro, in this masterpiece, Sefer, this is 20 years of Shiurim to Ar Sameach on the 13 Ikrim, starts out with the basic question. I think we mentioned this in the past. Starts out with the basic question of where did Rambam get the 13 Ikrim? There's no pasuk in the Torah that says these are the things you must believe in. And those that don't believe in these things are called apikorsim, meaning depending on which of the Ikrim you don't believe in, you're either one of the various categories of a heretic that Rambam lists in Hilchos Tshuva. He lists who is an apikoris, who is a min, who is all the various gradations of heresy. Depending on which one you don't believe in, you fall into one of those categories. The bottom line is, it's a mitzvah to believe in these things. Where does Rambam get these things from? So in Re'ei Emunah, in this Sefer, he explains, And he bases a lot on the Ramban, which you have in front of you, which we're going to read now, and the Rambam, that the nisim that Hashem did in Mitzrayim, okay, those nisim were specific revelations of different aspects of Hashem's power and involvement in the world, and those are the 13 Ikrim. In other words, everything that was taught and that Klal Yisrael experienced personally through the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim became the 13 Ikrim, the 13 articles of faith. But obviously, they are not blind leaps of faith because we experienced them. They were demonstrated to us. The reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated all of these 13 things to us in Mitzrayim is because they become the Yesod. They are the foundation of Matan Torah. There could never be a Matan Torah without this, because Klal Yisrael were not expected to accept a God not knowing anything about the qualities or the powers of this God. So first what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is showed Klal Yisrael's basic his existence, the fact that Hashem controls everything, the fact that Hashem knows what's going on, the fact that Hashem rewards and punishes and involves, the fact that Hashem speaks to people through Nevuah, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there's Tchias HaMesim, the fact that the Torah, so he revealed all these things. We'll see in a minute exactly how. And therefore, that becomes the reason that Klal Yisrael accept the Torah and say Nasa V'Nishma and accept forever to bind themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. It wasn't just thrown on them with no background. So the Nisim are fundamental. They establish the God that Klal Yisrael are going to accept. That's why, by the way, without going into this now, Hashem says to Moshe, up until now, my name was Shakai. I appeared to the Avos with Shakai. One of the meanings of Shakai is die. In other words, they got enough for what they needed to survive. I took care of them. I helped them. It was enough for them to succeed and to survive and to do their work. But now I'm coming with a different name, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, right? And that is my full revelation. And why is Hashem coming now Mitzrayim with the full revelation? Why not just enough for Klal Yisrael to survive? Because this is going to become the basis for Kabbalah Satorah. This is going to be why Klal Yisrael accept the Torah. So Hashem comes with the Shem HaMeforesh, the name, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which includes in it all of the forces that they saw, based on that revelation that the Nisim of Mitzrayim were an expression of, they accepted the Torah. So there could never be a Matan Torah without Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's why on Shabbos and Yontiv and Kiddush and Davening, all we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. We don't mention Mata Zecher Kabbalah Satorah, Zecher, we don't mention it ever except on Shavuos, because that was the inevitable consequence of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That was the natural outcome. Of course they were going to accept the Torah once the Yesod was in place, the roots were in place, and they saw everything that they saw, the revelation that they experienced. So clearly they were going to then, their will became to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and never deviate from that. And they bound themselves to this through accepting all the warnings and all the the punishments, and which we'll speak about also. If you quickly look into the Ramban that we gave out, you will see that Ramban says in the bottom of 296, let's read the English, however, when Hashem favors a group or an individual, performs a wonder from them involving an alteration of the world's usual course and natural law, the negation of all these heretical views, which he spoke about earlier, you could look back, is made clear to all. For the supernatural wonder indicates that the world, indeed, these are the Ikrim, has a God, who originated it ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin, something, right? Knows all, that's right, oversees all that occurs in it, is all powerful, and when the wonder is furthermore publicly declared beforehand through a prophet, the truth of the principle of prophecy is made clear as well, namely that God will speak to a person, and with acknowledgement of this principle, the entire Torah is sustained. Because the only reason we accepted the Torah is because we heard Moshe get Nevuah. Otherwise, we would never take Moshe's word for it. So Rambam goes on here. You can read it. If you have an English Hebrew Ramban, it's a long piece and it's a fundamental piece. You should read the whole thing. This is a group, by the way, everyone should have the English Hebrew Ramban. And it's a worthwhile set to invest in. But this is a big piece. It's in goes on for pages and it's very important. But we're not going to do it all now.
Where is it?
It's on the page. Parshas Bo, Pasuk. Perek Yud Gimel. Tezayin. Now, this is the Hashem established the Ikrim. Hashem established what became the 13 Ikrim, which is the Yesod of Kabbalah Satorah. Now, we're going back even further. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah. That's why he did all the Nisim. That's why he put him into Golos to begin with. Experienced the Choshech, the lack of these truths. They felt desperately what they were missing. Then revealed to them all of these ideas about who he is, who is Yud Kei Vav Kei. Revealed the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all things. No, totally all-controlling, perfect and good, just, involved, communicative, managing, the whole, everything that is God-like about God was revealed to them, and this became the source of Matan Torah. He did this because he wanted them to accept the Torah. He wanted to make it something that they'll want to do on their own. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu went through this whole process for whose sake? For Klal Yisrael's sake. So that they will accept the Torah. Why does Hashem want them to accept the Torah? Because we are taught, and this is a whole huge topic in and of itself, that the ultimate good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do for humanity and created humanity for this purpose is to bestow upon them the way through which they could use their free choice to become, to really connect to, become part of, in a sense, the original source, the original or truth, goodness, the what brought all of the Bria into creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, so to speak, to create humanity who has the capacity through their own free choice to come close to and somehow be part of and filled up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own goodness, own perfection, own essence, whatever that means. That's a whole separate subject. The Ramchal speaks a lot about this. The whole purpose of the Bria was goodness. If Hashem is the ultimate good, to have people through their free choice become part of that and earn it on their own. That's the whole thing. Now, back. Koach Masav Higid La'amo. They're not precisely. I don't think. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what exactly you're referring to, but we'll talk about it after. It's a long Rashi, so. Okay, here's the thing now. Let's go back even further, all right? Even further, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Klal Yisrael to receive a Torah. That's why he put them in Mitzrayim, which is Choshech. Let's go back to discuss this concept of creating Choshech so that humanity could have free will and with that free will realize what they're missing and seek it out on their own. Okay, what we're going to do now is go into, there's a Medrash, okay, a Medrash Rabbah. In Shemos, and this is in Truma, which is about the Beis Hamikdash, the Mishkan. And there's a phrase here that is the source of a huge, huge idea that is Kabbalistic in its, you know, implications, but it's also very philosophical and very real and very relevant on a philosophical level. Without getting mysterious, it can be understood. It must be understood. It's a topic that relates to, like I said, a Kabbalistic term called Tzimtzum, but you find it in the Medrash. Let's introduce it. We're speaking about a Mishkan. And this Mishkan is supposed to be a place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so to speak, what? Contained? What does that mean? Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be found? So this is a major problem because we are dealing, first we have to contend with a principle. There's a major principle that all of Kabbalah is trying to answer and Machshav is trying to answer, a major principle and a major question. The principle is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he is to be the HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's worthy of worshiping, must be totally, infinitely complete and perfect on every level. In other words, nothing can exist outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or other than Hashem, because then you would have a God that is very large and all-encompassing, except not totally all-encompassing, because there are certain things that are outside of his jurisdiction. He didn't make them. He doesn't control them. They're outside of him. Once you have that, once that comes into play, it's not a God worth worshiping, right? It can't be that there's elements or forces or anything that's outside of Hashem and beyond his control. Therefore, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we speak about, which is completely incomprehensible, the creator of time and space and everything, is all-knowing, all-perfect, all-tov, all-good. Nothing exists other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's infinity to infinite proportions that are inconceivable of the mind. So then that's a principle. That's an axiom. The Kabbalistic term, which you'll hear used, is Ein Sof, which basically means infinite, no end. Okay. Now, question. If that's the case, and that must be the case, there is no options to that, then how do you account for us, physical people, life, things that seem to be outside of God, that seem to have their own separate will, that seem to be independent and believe they're independent, and we've spoken about here, the Ani, which very much feels separate and independent, autonomous. How do you account for that? How did that come to be? How did Hashem create that? And for what did Hashem create that? So now this is the question that is dealt with here in the Medrash when they're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says here that he's going to, so to speak, the word here the Medrash uses is a version of the word Simsim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to come down, which means into your consciousness, not literal. I'm going to constrict my presence in one amma by one amma that's on top of the aron between the kruvim. My whole presence is going to be constricted, so to speak, there. Okay. This concept of atzamtzem, what that means is this. On the most basic, simplest level, and never think about this in any practical way. Like when we start talking about Hashem constricting his presence and trying to explain how free choice and human beings came into being, it's like you take a physics course and they're trying to explain gravity. So they say to you, imagine there's a huge plastic sheet spread out and a bowling ball in the center. So everything starts rolling towards the center. That's how space is curved and gravity. I mean, that we heard those words, but it doesn't mean we have a deep understanding of really what it is. The people that spend their whole life studying physics have a better understanding. So what we're speaking about now is kind of on that level. Okay, just the last skin of the, you know, of the thinnest paper thin skin of the onion, right? The end, the last. Okay, so when we speak about this concept, we have this idea. How is it that people who consider themselves independent, things that do not clearly perceive God's presence or are expressions of God's presence, how do they exist at all? So the idea is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted there to be creations with free will. However, if this Ein Sof, this infinite perfection, this total, let's call it light, would continue to pervade everything, and existence would be brought into being with this Ein Sof present, nothing would manage to survive, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's enormous, totality is so much beyond what any created thing can endure, that nothing created will manage to exist. It will be overwhelmed and it will blend back in to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To have something separate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there can never be, or perceived to be separate, this total overflow of Hashem's presence, what you might call the R. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu do, just like we do when we can't look at the sunlight because it will burn out our eyes on a clear, crystal clear day in the middle of the summer. So in order to be able to get some ability to appreciate the sun, what do? Put on dark glasses. Dark glasses. Now those are barriers or filters or some type of mechitza, you might say, or in more Kabbalistic terminology, clothing, that you're clothed, right? So that, in a sense, how come the light of the sun is like removed now, not in all its intensity now overwhelming us, and therefore we can get some type of benefit from it, we can look at it. So the concept is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to withdraw, so to speak, himself, or conceal himself, so to speak, or constrict himself, whatever word you want to use. It's not literal. Somehow create in a new type of reality where Hashem's presence is not there. to what we can see. Basically not there. That Hashem creates something in a sense which we call the removal of the R. He creates Choshech. This is very fundamental. When we say Bereishis Bara, the Bria, we don't think about it as Hashem actually creating something physical. The Bria is the Choshech. It's a very important principle. The concealing, so to speak, of Hashem's overwhelming presence, the holding it back, which is an aspect of gevura, restraint, because its natural tendency is to take over everything, to be everything. It is everything. It isn't limited. So to make it limited is an act of gevura, restraint, that creates that limitation or withdrawal, creates choshech. When we say Hashem created bara, we mean removed himself, so to speak, thereby leaving choshech in that place. That's the bria. Everything else can exist because of that. The actual bria is borei choshech, and we say it in the bracha before, right after Yishtabach. Yotzer or uborei choshech. Now, the reason we say borei, which is yesh me'ayin, something from nothing, and we say yotzer or, which is yesh me'yesh, and in Arabic, bereishis, the pasuk is also first there's choshech, then there's or. Okay, in this pasuk, it's reversed, yotzer or uborei choshech, but the process is that first the Kadosh Baruch Hu creates something which is literally not like him at all. Choshech, the non-presence of Hashem. That's considered Yesh Me'ayin, because there's nothing like that. It's a brand new Bria that's almost contrary to the Emes, that there's a place devoid, so to speak, of Hashem's obvious presence. That's the Bria of Choshech. Then what happens, as you see in Bereishis, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. So what happens is this. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to create a human being who can perceive himself to be independent, because that's the seat of free choice. The more free choice, the more God-like this creature is, and the more they can choose to do what's right and to reconnect themselves to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem, so to speak, conceals himself or withdraws or creates choshech. Out of that comes the capacity, the potential for an independent existence of a human being, right? From the human being's perspective. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not leave us lost, floundering in this choshech, because what would we do there? If Hashem is totally concealed, we would be lost, and we do get lost. So, but Hashem didn't leave us totally in pitch black. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then reinserted, so to speak, penetrated this darkness with a little R, that's Yehi R, V'yomer Elokim Yehi R. Choshech is first, go back to Bereishis, you'll see. Then Yehi R, Hashem penetrates this darkness with a little R. Now, what's the R going to be? It's on many levels. Number one, it's the intuitive awareness we have of higher things, of our yearning for Ruchnius, for something greater, more than that. Remember we said that there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu withdrew himself, so we're going back to an idea that we did mention a little bit in the past. Imagine you're blowing up a balloon into sand. Then you let the air out of the balloon. So as you're blowing up the balloon, the sand moves away, right? And you're left with like a well. And then you take out the balloon. So what are you left with? An impression, right? An empty space. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes his naturally, you know, what naturally is everything, his presence, actually withdraws it and withholds it, okay? What's left is called a roshem, right? You remember this? An impression, a well. We know something was there, and it's not here anymore, and we sense that we're missing something. That's the core of every person's deep-seated, as we said, vague but relentless feeling that something's missing. I want more. I'm not satisfied with just these things. We spoke about it. What was the word that represents this idea? Remember, we did this. Vayachulu. Kolsa nafshi, right? We say nichsefa. That yearning is kesef. It's money. It's currency. You could buy something with it. What do you buy with it? Chachma. Zeshekana chachma. That's kolsa nafshi. That's vayachulu. That's ochel. That's tachlis. That's, right? We'll be getting back to these. And we already spoke about this a little bit. That yearning, the sense that something's missing. Now take the word choshech and flip the letters. What do you have? Shachach. What is for when something, I can't remember, I knew it, but it's escaped me right now, right? You know that feeling? I can't remember it. It's on the tip of my tongue. That is the what Hashem leaves here, so to speak, with the choshech. When Hashem withdraws the R and holds it back, which is an unnatural state, and it takes gevurah, so to speak. Okay? So we are left with a darkness. That darkness is how we exist. Lack of overwhelming perception of Hashem. By the way, what happens when Hashem fills that darkness with his R, with his Ein Sof, the moment of revelation of Har Sinai? Nobody could survive it. The vessels, so to speak, are not capable of containing this R. Therefore, Hashem must be concealed. The Medrash here says, straight, same idea, that I read you the end of the Medrash, but Hashem says here the following. When Bnei Yisrael says to Moshe, you know, you continue to tell us what Hashem is saying because we can't, because if we continue, we're all going to die. So it says here, Kol Hashem Bekoach. Remember, Tehillim says, the voice of Hashem was Bekoach. Now, Bekocho Eina Omer. It doesn't say, Kol Hashem Bekocho. Hashem's voice was in his Koach. Ela Bekoach. Lefi Kocho Shel Kol Echad Ve'Echad. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only allows his voice, so to speak, to be heard, or that light to penetrate, according to the Koach of the recipient, which is supposed to increase and advance in life. But the point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that we can't contain this full exposure, or even partial exposure. So Hashem contains himself, leaves what's considered darkness, which is concealment, which is what allows us to exist, allows though some of that R to re-enter. The Torah is R, Oraisa. That's what Torah is. That through the Torah, that R re-enters. We sense the loss of it and we're seeking it. That's Shachach. Something's here and we're missing it. We feel its emptiness. It's the lack of it being there. And now the job is, through our free choice, to try to hold on, to get a hold of some of that aura that re-entered this darkness through the Torah. And the more a person holds on to that aura and lives by it and thinks by it and their reactions are affected by it, the more that or begins to re-enter, as we said, Lefi Kocho shall call Adam Ba'adam, according to that person's Koach, to reattach to the R will fill them. As they advance, they'll be filled with more and more R. When we said Hashem withdrew that R and almost sucked it out, it's unnatural because the essence of Hashem is everything, Ein Sof, infinity, creates a vacuum. What happens with a vacuum? Sucks everything into it. If the person really begins to believe that they're alone in that darkness and they forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they ignore the R that's available to them, they get lost in that darkness, but they still feel the same something's missing. They just don't know what's missing, so they start feeling that vacuum starts pulling into it every shtus, every temporary, death-bound, finite, meaningless thing. But if the person recognizes that they're not alone in the darkness, there's R and they hold on to it, guess what starts being sucked into that vacuum? The R that Hashem withdrew starts being sucked in by the power of the person to bring it back. And each person feels filled with greater and greater degrees of this R. In a greater sense, Rambam explains that the greater a person pursues the Chochma, which is enlightenment, the greater they have a taiva for it, the lust for it, the greater they're filled with ahava, huge love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's how the advancement begins to grow. So we have a couple of principles in place here that account for why there has to be a choshech, how we're not alone in the choshech, and what our job is in the state of choshech is to make for ourselves greater and greater light. Now, the mashal for this is there's a physical mashal. The first Rashi in Shemos asks why Hashem lists the names of Klal Yisrael again when they were just listed at the end of Bereishis. And he says, because like the stars, Hashem has names for all the stars, identifies them individually, takes them out, and brings them back in by number. So two Klal Yisrael who are likened to the stars, Hashem counts them. Again, he loves to count them. The concept of Bnei Yisrael being likened to the stars. Think about this. We, the planet Earth, exists as one of the planets revolving around our sun. Our sun, which sits at the edge of the Milky Way, okay, is one of hundreds of millions of stars, most of them much bigger than our sun. We have a small star. And that's just in the Milky Way. And there are hundreds of millions of galaxies, and each galaxy has hundreds of millions of stars. Now, when our Earth, when we are facing the sun during daytime, there's light in our world because our sun is 92 million miles away, and that's the right distance to light up our world. But as soon as the Earth continues to rotate on its axis and we no longer directly face the sun, it's pitch black. Wait a minute. Pitch black when there are hundreds of millions of suns just in our galaxy. Why is it pitch black? The essence, the truth is that space, as we know now, is pitch black, despite the fact that there are billions and billions and billions of suns. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. That's essence is Choshech. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not leave us alone in the Choshech. He made billions of rays of light, points of light, stars. This is in a physical, physically. So that when it's dark, we know we're not alone. We know and we can calibrate our motions, our travels, where we are by the stars. Klal Yisrael referred to as the stars, because we play that role, that in the Choshech, which is the essence of the Bria, the primary force that allowed for a Bria, and there must be a Choshech, or there's no free choice, and therefore that was the whole point of the creation. So in this Choshech, Klal Yisrael play the role of the stars who illuminate for us and for everyone else that there is an R that permeates the Choshech, and this R, no, it will not light up space completely. That's not for our world. That's when we are freed from this life, this dimension, and we are no longer in the Choshech. But nevertheless, you know, along the way, we're not alone here. We have what to look to and what to kind of keep our you know, our compass set by, that we know, you know, we have guiding lights. That's the concept of the R that penetrates the darkness that Klal Yisrael very associated with. Now, we're not going to do it now, but we spoke about it a little bit last time, did we? No, I think we missed it. The moon. The moon plays a very important role in this whole mashal and this whole metaphor, but that's for a little further down the road. But right now, the idea here is that there must be Choshech. So let's go back to Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Choshech Mitzrayim. That was the punishment of the Egyptians. But that also was our experience. We lived in Choshech. Choshech being a state where we said in the beginning, speech is in Golos. Right? That's also how Mitzrayim is described, which means we're in the darkness. Okay? We experience the loneliness of the darkness. And we know it's near, certainly the women, by the way. Women are very important here, the female, and the whole concept of the female philosophically, which also I hope to get to. They recognize that something's missing and just hold on because it's not going to stay like this forever. Remember Miriam said, don't stop having children. There will be a geula and there's got to be a nation. And, you know, she saw the light even though it was dark out, right? Even though everyone else felt that it was dark and there's no future reason to continue. And there was no future really that they could, you know, see coming. You know, so she, though, saw that although it's dark now, there's going to be light. So the women always were able to keep this in mind. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to put them into the Choshech so they would experience what it means to be lost, to be without light, to be in a world without a clear ability to define what we're seeking, what we're missing, what we're seeking, but to know we're missing something, but not to be able to define what it is. That's the first stage. That's the Choshech. That's the first stage, to exist independent with Hashem's light concealed. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, I'm coming b'shem Havaya. That's my revelation of some, to whatever capacity Klal Yisrael could experience in Mitzrayim. I'm coming with much more of that light. There were 10 makos in Mitzrayim. The 10 makos in Mitzrayim, very important, they form a unit with the 10 mamaros of Bereishis and the 10 dibros. When we say that Hashem created the world with 10 mamaros, 10 statements, what we're trying to say is HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the world into being and made his will knowable. That's the concept of an amira. Amira means, we know that Amira, there's different descriptions of Hashem's, so to speak, speaking to the world. Amira, Dibor. When we use the word Amira, as in the 10 Mamaros, what we mean is, as Rashi tells us, Amira is Lashon Raka. Okay, it's soft. Soft doesn't mean whispering. It means that Hashem makes his will knowable, but doesn't compel humanity to address the will of Hashem, to face it and to respond to it. He just makes it knowable. That's Choshech. For the 2,000 years up till Yetzias Mitzrayim, they are called the 2,000 years of Choshech, of Tohu Vavohu, before there was a Torah. Why is that? Because humanity existed, but they were not forced to face the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, Hashem created the world for a reason, brought the physical world into existence for a reason. If you searched, like Avram, you could figure out that reason, but Hashem didn't overwhelm you with telling you, like by the Aseret HaDibros, this is what I want from the creation, and this is what I expect from you, and this is what you're supposed to be doing here. You're supposed to recapture for yourself my concealed light, so to speak. That's called living. That's called being alive. Everything else is death. So the humanity, for the first 2,000 years of existence, before Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalah Satorah, existed, so to speak, in a state of the 10 Mamaros, which means that they were in the darkness, which was necessary. And it was up to them to try to, like Avram did, figure out what they're supposed to do and why there is the darkness. But no one really managed to do this very well because they were so lost in it. And they were so involved in it. And they felt that it was the way they wanted to live. Only Avraham understood that there's something to do with this free choice we've been given, with this concealment. You're supposed to use your own desire, your own will, your own understanding of what's missing to come back and find the Kodesh Baruch Hu and be part of your origin, of your source, and then truly be alive. Then came the 10 Makos. The 10 Makos that Kodesh Baruch Hu revealed, which became the Ikrim, why he created this world, what his relationship with this world is, what he wants from this world. He actually made it clear to humanity what it was. That's the 10 Makos. And that transitions into the Aseret HaDibros, where Klal Yisrael gets specific instructions of how to live according to the will of Hashem. And they accept it completely. Mamaros? Every time in Bereishis it says, Vayomer Lukim, Yiyar, Vayomer Lukim, not, you know, Tachay Aretz Desha. Each time it says Vayomer Lukim, that's one of the Mamaros. Okay. What that's trying to say is that Hashem's Bria expresses the will of Hashem if you search for it like Avraham did. But by the time it was the Makos, Hashem, in name of Yudke Vavke, made it very clear exactly what his will is so that no one could ever claim they don't know it. And then the Aseret HaDibros, Klal Yisrael, accepted the Torah to live day to day in a way in this physical world that's an expression and that would reconnect us to that art and blend us back in, and we would then be like a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Nitzchias, eternal, and what we would do would be good, and our Chochmah would be true, not mistaken ideas, but true ideas, and we would be part of, we would actually, a Kodesh Baruch Hu would be able to bestow upon us, to whatever our capacity, that's our job, to increase that capacity, the elements of himself, so to speak, which is the ultimate good. So Mitzrayim was where Klal Yisrael and all of humanity went through a turning point, where it became clear from this point on that we knew what we're supposed to do with the darkness and how to do it. So the entire process of the Choshech of Mitzrayim, the Golos, the Makos, and then Kabbalah Satorah was HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, he was bringing the world to the purpose he created the world for, which is that Klal Yisrael, a nation which became Klal Yisrael, we were the ones that chose, would understand and would want to and would commit to and would become Or Lagoyim, because we would have a path, a derech, in the darkness, in a way of expanding and expanding the Or. And I just want to end with one idea, even though this is just the tip of the iceberg of ideas that we, Mir Tashem, will revisit. But Halevi says a beautiful explanation, a little twist on a classical idea, which is, I just want to read something real quick, quickly. He says, schar mitzvah mitzvah. So we normally translate it as the reward for doing a mitzvah is the opportunity to do another mitzvah. So he says, and there's another explanation, which is schar mitzvah, allowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you the schar of a mitzvah. Now let's talk more deeply. What is the schar of a mitzvah? That in the person themselves, their filters, that which conceals HaKadosh Baruch Hu from them, slowly, slowly, slowly erodes, and they can absorb more chachma, more das, more ar. That's the schar of the person's effort. We try a little, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us with this. That Hashem could give us schar mitzvah, allow us to get closer to what is being concealed from us so that we can be free. That's schar mitzvah. Schar mitzvah, mitzvah. Allowing Hashem to give you schar mitzvah, making yourself capable of receiving schar mitzvah. That's a mitzvah. You're letting Hashem do what He wants to do. You're doing a mitzvah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because that's ultimately what Hashem created the whole thing for. So that we should be able to have a part, so to speak, be connected to that Ein Sof, which is total blissful perfection that's incomprehensible to a human being. But that's the ultimate pleasure. There's no pleasure beyond that pleasure. And allowing Hashem to, that we making ourselves capable of receiving it so Hashem could give it to us, because He can't give it to us. It will shatter us if we're not ready and Hashem gives it to us. We'll never survive it. That's the whole famous with the four that went into the Pardes and only Rabbi Kiva survived, went into levels, were revealed to them that they were not prepared for, or was bestowed upon them that they weren't prepared for. One died, one went crazy, one became an apostate, and only Rabbi Akiva survived. And by the way, he's a teacher of Shimon Bar Yochai. He's the beginning, he's one of the beginning, not the beginning, it starts at Sinai, but one of the critical links in the chain of Kabbalah, by the way. But one last thing, Rav Kook says so beautifully in the 20th level the following. It is easy to understand that the movement of the self towards the absolutely free and perfectly good divine will is what develops all of existence. It reveals the light in the individual souls. It paves paths for the greatest and the most sublime ways of life of the individual and the community. It opens up all the spiritual and practical senses to be attentive to all that is sublime and noble. This approach leaves its mark in the characteristics of a noble heritage and the highest elevation possible for man by perfection of the prophetic gift, which today we do not have sufficient strength to know thoroughly, inscribes within us the goodwill that befits the divine freedom in all the proper depth. He speaks very poetically, but what he's saying is, for a human being to come closer to this is the ultimate bliss, the ultimate perfection, the ultimate blending of the divine, so to speak, with the human being. Higher and higher levels are prophetic, which we are not able to access. But this is the will. This is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's bestowed upon us a freedom to achieve this on our own. And the ultimate will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that we should achieve this. Let me actually say one quick last, very, very important thing. It's a very important thing. It takes a few minutes. We're talking about encouraging people to do what's right, to find the or, to connect themselves to it, to learn Torah, to do the mitzvahs properly. Okay. By the way, one of the fundamental mitzvahs we have to do is Kriya Shema, morning and night. It's a mitzvah's aseh. We have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim twice a day because of this. So we say the parsha of tzitzis, although women say it, because even though we don't wear tzitzis, because it says in it about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Anochi Hashem Elokech Mishor, Tzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Lios Lachem Elokim. So we have an obligation to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim twice a day because it's the yesod of Kabbalah Satorah. So we know that we are encouraged to do this. But interestingly enough, the Torah is full of punishments and warnings. So I was just in Florida, and you know, they tell us about the apes and the animals and the way they train the animals. Let's say Shamu. Shamu is trained, and I actually saw this in an article by a chinuch professional, and he advocated working with children the same way, but that is a major mistake. Because think about it. How do they work with Shamu? They wanted Shamu to eventually jump up 20 feet and hit the ball, right? Now, this is a huge, enormous, heavy whale. So they put a rope in the water. Every time, it was under the water. Every time he swam over the rope, they gave him, randomly, a treat. Swam over it a few times, he realized he gets treats. He swam under it, they ignored him completely. Totally, zero, no consequences, nothing. Every time he swam over it, they gave him a treat. He eventually learned that it makes sense to swim over it. And then they started raising it half an inch, half an inch, half an inch. Now it's 20 feet high. And the way they started this is just rewarding good behavior and ignoring bad behavior. Why? Well, the Torah doesn't believe in that. That's clear. Why does the Torah have once we receive the Torah, there's all the warnings, all the threats, if most you must, the car race, tsaras, war. I mean, there's a lot of threats, illness. The Torah threatens, you know, tells us what happens if we do what's wrong. Now, why? Why don't we just encourage the good? Then the person is self-motivated, there's trust, there's love, there's all self, you know, why not? What's so bad about that system? So the answer is obvious. If Shamu swims under the rope, it's irrelevant. Correct? However, if we give in to the Yetzer Hara, the Taiva, that tells us, you know what, you're alone in the darkness and you are an end in and of yourself. So do whatever you want because you are everything and there's nothing beyond you and there's nothing you have to strive towards and there's nothing greater than yourself. So indulge everything you want to now in your own subjective, you know, and, you know, excuse yourself for it with all your explanations. There are big consequences. What are the consequences to that? We get lost in the darkness. And that's the ultimate disaster. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't create us for the darkness. He created us so we should have the free choice to find and reconnect ourselves to Hashem's aura. So let me just say this. The sin and the punishment are the very same thing. The sin is a person believing that there's nothing in the darkness, being all alone, and then a person lives and dies without any connection. That's the sin. That's the punishment. So what are all the yisurim in the Torah, the wars and the illnesses? Those are not punishments. They're to shake a person out of the darkness, grab a person, shake them up, and remind them through making them vulnerable and desperate and in pain that they better look for something beyond themselves, and that's how they reconnect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The chet is the onesh. The sin is the punishment for the person. Everything else that Hashem gives us are methods to return us and keep us on track. Okay. A lot to think about for now. Keep it in mind. We're going to build on it. Yes, questions? Yes. Yes.